Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. About 5 years ago, we had Professor Alok Kumar here on Common Threads to discuss his then-new book, Sciences of the Ancient Hindus. What was interesting about the book, besides the impressive historical account it offered, was the backstory. You see, when the manuscript was ready to go, the publisher requested Alok to modify the title to Sciences of the Ancient Indians, but the author stood firm and ended up self-publishing his work as opposed to making the change. Well, Professor Kumar now has a follow-up to the previous title. This one is Ancient Hindu Science, Its Transmission and Impact on World Cultures. It's a fascinating explanation of how so much of what has been discovered in nature happened in India primarily, and within a particular religious culture. We have the author waiting in the wings, and before I bring him on, let me tell you a bit about his background. His college training, all of it was in India, and after graduation, he was a scientist at the Indian Institute of Technology in Mumbai. After that, he moved to Germany, where he was the Alexander von Humboldt Fellow at the Institute for Kernphysik in Darmstadt. And then he came to the United States, where he was a lecturer at California State University in Long Beach. And finally, for several years, he's had a relationship with the State University of New York, the Oswego campus, where he taught physics and is a distinguished teaching professor. We welcome to Common Threads Professor Alok Kumar. Hello, Alok.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me for this conversation. I'm honored, and this conversation will allow me to share my thoughts with your listeners.
Yes, yes. And the first thought I'd like you to share, let's discuss how you came to write this book after the first one, and also, tell us the story about how the first one came to be. That is to say, what I just mentioned a minute ago about having an argument with the publisher. Because the last time you were on was about 5 years ago, so some people listening today may not know just exactly how the first book came to be.
See, I grew up in a very holy town in India. It's known as Haridwar. The meaning of that town is gateway to God. And that's where I grew up. And my parents did not want me to leave India. But when they realized that, I'm determined to go, then they said, okay, make me some promises, you know. And one of the promises was to write a book, do something for the religion, for the country, and that's how I ended up writing that book, Sciences of the Ancient Hindus. And the publisher wanted me to change the title of the book, and I thought if I change the title of the book, I have to change the whole book, and I refused to do it. That book was about 450 pages. The weight was over 4 pounds. And therefore, it was heavy to carry. And I heard many criticisms about that. And so I ended up writing another much concise book. And this time, I have even a better story to share. I wrote a contract from a very famous publisher from Europe and wrote the book. They even produced the galley proof. And when the book was about to be released, then they basically did not release it. And the problem was they did not like the term Hindus in the title. So it's not the first time it has happened more than once with me. That's an interesting story. And again, this time, I refused to change, and I'm glad that I did not change because the book has done very well to my satisfaction, although I'm still driving a Toyota Corolla. that's the reality. But, I have a lot of satisfaction in terms of how the book was received by the readers. It has been reviewed quite well.
I'm sorry, but I guess I was mistaken. I thought that this second book was published by an outside publisher. You're telling me it
that
was...
That is right. That is correct.
Oh, okay.
But I had a contract with another publisher from Europe. They even produced the galley proof of the book, and at that stage, they decided not to publish it.
Oh, and you got a new publisher.
An American publisher who published it.
All right. There we go. I was not aware that you ran into that roadblock, but then were able to find someone else to publish it. Now, so let me ask you this, Alok. I've never seen a book entitled anything like Sciences of the Ancient Muslims or the Sciences of the Christians. We hear about Arab science and the contributions that it has made to the world. We hear about mainly European science, at least in the genesis of scientific thought. It happened in Europe there. But why should there be a book about the sciences of Hindus if there's not a book about science in Christians, science in Muslims, science in Jews, science in Buddhists, whatever you want to say? What is unique about Hindu culture that spawned this book?
There are at least every year maybe 50 books published on Islamic science every year. And practically all top publishers, they publish a book on Islamic science. Not true. Same thing with Buddhist science. There are plenty of books, even some recommended by Dalai Lama, where the title will clearly indicate Buddhist science. The reason it is appropriate is because Vedas, Upanishads, and Puranas, these are the books of the Hindus. And whatever I'm writing is coming from those books. It is appropriate provide a unique perspective of that culture where science and religion, they were in harmony with each other. Science helped religion, and religion helped science, and they grew up together. So I thought it's a story that must be shared, and I'm glad that I shared that story.
No, that's interesting, and you're right. I don't read a lot of science books, admittedly. I'm not in the field of science, so I was not aware that there were so many books on Islamic science. I only hear of Arab science, or I hear of the science of Islamic Europe, such as the discoveries that were made perhaps in Spain by Muslims. So this is interesting. And you said that you had a bit of a challenge because when you use the term Hindu, people automatically assumed that it was suggesting some sort of political extremism. Could you comment on that?
Such concerns are not based on reality. Let me share something about Hinduism. It's an ancient religion that originated in India. And currently is the third largest religion with about 1 billion followers all over the world. We have 3 million Hindus in the USA. And it's basically a way of life where we live in harmony with nature. And the most important thing in this religion is their moral or religious codes, what we call dharma, are universal in nature. You will never read anywhere in Hindu books that if you become a Hindu, you will achieve salvation or, you know, liberation, but if you don't, then you will go to hell. Such statements are nowhere. They will not even tell you to, you know, become a Hindu. They will recommend a lifestyle. And that's part of the reason why things like yoga, meditation are practiced by millions and millions of people all over the world without ever knowing or worshipping Hindu gods and goddesses. So it's a religion where basically all the rules are universal in nature. The most important, if I have to say, one doctrine of Hinduism, that is their belief in reincarnation, what we call the transmigration of soul. Just like, people change clothes, the same way soul, it goes from one body to another. So, and in our history, Hindus or the Indians, they have always given refuge to Jews, Christians, Muslims at different time so that they could escape persecution. Not only that, they were allowed to promote their own religion. So Hindus are very cosmopolitan people, and I think that criticism is not based on realities.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is our guest, Professor Alok Kumar, and we're talking about his book, Ancient Hindu Science, Its Transmission and Impact on World Cultures. You said something interesting in the book. It never occurred to me that in the West, people are often concerned about who invented or discovered this or that. And in Hindu culture, there was not that intense curiosity. There wasn't a passion for attaching one's name to a discovery or an invention. I find an interesting parallel with the religion. Hinduism has no named founder or founders. I'm just fascinated by that.
Yeah, that is true. First, since it's an ancient religion, we do not even know when it started. So no date can be assigned for its beginning. And knowledge was considered to be divine. And therefore, it was not considered to be a good thing to assign name of the author, with those books. And therefore, most of the books, we do not know who wrote it, Indians or Hindus, because it's an ancient religion and they have been around, for so long, they did not care much for history. In fact, Al-Biruni wrote about it, and Carl Jung, a very famous psychoanalyst of the previous century, he studied in India and he studied Hindu religion, and he gave a very appropriate answer why history is missing in India. According to him, that there is nothing in India that has not happened many times before. So why document the history, And according to him, history makes sense in European countries that are pretty, new, recent, their history, but not for India.
Would you say that in the general scientific community, and I'm talking about globally, that the view of science is still mainly Eurocentric. It seems to lay people such as myself, there's this understanding that the West is the savior of humanity because of its discoveries and inventions.
That is true. Not only it is Eurocentric, it is highly incomplete. And let me give you one example of it. You know, in the year 2000, because it was the beginning of the third millennium, you know, scientists decided that they are going to document the top 100 discoveries in the history of human beings. So when they documented the top 100 discoveries, 98 discoveries were from Europe, and only two, or I should say the Western world, and only two were from the non-Western world. One was the invention of zero that was attributed to India. And secondly, the astronomy of the Hindus and the Mayans. By the term Hindu and Mayans, these are, you know, not mine. That's how it was documented. So if Hindus and the Mayans made such an important contribution that they were the among the top 100 in the history of human beings, then why don't we teach, you know, in astronomy course? You pick up most astronomy courses, introductory courses, you're not going to learn much about the Hindus or the Mayans. So this is a prime example of that the history or the science that we teach is highly incomplete. And the reason is Europe at one time decided to colonize the whole world, and they became quite successful at that. And, you know, when they decided to colonize the whole world, it is much easier to colonize somebody if you can convince that person that you are weak and you need me if you want to grow. And that's how massive literature was produced in the West. And now, with time, it is going to change, but it is still Eurocentric. No question about it.
You mentioned...
And by the way, people in Europe, even they will admit it, and they do admit it.
You mentioned the discovery of zero. You know, I have a theory that the person who discovered zero in ancient India was probably me in a previous incarnation. And I'll tell you how this probably happened. I was probably given a pop quiz in a science class, and there were 10 questions, and I didn't get any right. And it was the first time in the history of the school that nobody got any of them right, and they had to come up with a score for me, and they came up with zero. What do you think? Is that a good theory?
The invention of zero as a mathematical entity, I think, evolved out of Hindu religious philosophy. And there, they wanted to define God. And God had two, you know, there were two ways to define God. One was by defining God with attributes. So God, can he be male? Yes. Can he be a female? Yes. And so on. You continue with that, you know, and God can have any manifestation, and therefore God can have infinite number of manifestations. And that's how the concept of infinity came. Now, the second way to describe God is neti neti, means not that, not that. And whatever is left is the God. And that's how the concept of zero came. So the concept of zero and infinite both came, evolved out of the religious philosophies of the Hindus, but we do not know the exact time when this concept became a mathematical entity. But definitely we know that the concept existed, in the pre-Christian era. I'm pretty certain about that.
Now, I believe that the word on the street is that Arabs came up with zero. I think if you talk to a lot of people who might know a little bit about ancient science, that's the generally understood reality. Go on. But I think the Arabs did do something with zero. Am I correct? That was not done before, or is that wrong too?
That is correct, my dear. Let me share the Arab contribution. There was a scientist named Al-Khwarizmi. He was a noted scientist in the Middle East, and he wrote a book where he defined, his three books, that he wrote, and he is popular because of those books. He is the one who coined the term algebra. He coined something in Arabic, Al-Jabr, that eventually became algebra. He defined zero as sifar. Sifar means nothing. He wrote three very popular books that were based on Hindu science. And the title of the books that he wrote clearly indicated, and on the very first page, he wrote that these are the sciences of India, or sciences of the Hindus. He used the term sifar for zero. Sifar means nothing. When the Europeans, his books became very popular in Europe, when Europeans learned that, they used the term cipher in Latin, which was basically derived from sifar. That cipher, when Italian learned that concept, they spelled it with Z, cipher. And eventually, French changed it to zero, and that's how the concept of zero evolved. Now, Europeans, they learned mathematics from the Arabs. No question about it. And that's the reason, they wrote, they attribute zero to the Arabs. However, the most interesting thing is, if you read any book written in Europe prior to 13th century, means in 11th century, 10th century, there they write that these are the basically coming from India, these are Hindu, mathematics. It is after 13th century it became Arabic contribution. How it happened is a mystery of science. We do not know. So prior to 13th century, Europeans knew that Hindus made a tremendous contribution to science and technology, but that knowledge disappeared after 13th century.
And you're saying that the Arabs sort of served as a medium between Hindu culture in India and the European, predominantly Christian culture in the Middle Ages. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that is true. The Arabs, they learned Hindu science and mathematics. They assimilated that knowledge, evolved it, preserved it, and passed it to Europe. So they were the master, they were the teacher of Europeans, in science and technology. But the contribution originated from India, and that is still, unfortunately, a secret to, a large number of people.
Well, Professor Kumar, this has been fascinating. We're out of time for this episode of Common Threads, but there's still many more questions to ask, so I hope that you'll be able to join us next week as well.
Oh, I would love to. Just let me know.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. My name is Fred Stella, and with me today has been Professor Alok Kumar from the State University of New York, and we're speaking about his book, Ancient Hindu Science, Its Transmission and Impact on World Cultures. Please join us again next week here on WGVU.